Good morning. The lesson that I've chosen for this morning is one that I have preached before. I may even have preached it twice before. It's kind of hard to tell from my notes. But I was looking back over because after last night, the sermon I had prepared, I don't know, those of you who preach, like I have probably 30 or 40 sermons in my Google Drive now. But if you told me tomorrow I had to preach 35 of them, it'd be hard because sometimes the topic just seizes you better than others. And if you have a topic that is not something that you're feeling at the moment, it is more difficult to preach it. And so the topic I had prepared was not one that I was particularly feeling. And when I looked back over my notes, this one just really struck me. I want to thank those of you who were there last night again, and especially Wanda and Larry, for a wonderful evening for my mother. I saw a smile on her face that honestly I haven't seen in a long time. And I appreciate that very much. And that's kind of what I want to talk about this morning. In Mark, the 12th chapter, and I don't want this to come across the way that it might, but in Mark, the 12th chapter, starting in verse 41, now Jesus sat opposite the treasury and saw how the people put money into the treasury, and many who were rich put in much. Then one poor widow came and threw in two mites, which make a quadrants. So he called his disciples to himself and said to them, assuredly, I say to you that this poor widow has put in more than all those who have given to the treasury, for they all put in out of their abundance, but she out of her poverty put in all that she had, her whole livelihood. And, you know, what he's saying is that you can't just look at this and say what is the amount that has been given here because, you know, we're all being called upon to give what we can. And all of you who have been so good to my family have given a lot, and I appreciate that. There's a story that's in my notes here, and again, when I read this, you may be like, oh yeah, this is that sermon again. But anyway, a teacher in a Caribbean country once had a little girl in her class who had no shoes. One weekend, the teacher bought the child a pair of shoes. The next year, the teacher moved to a different school and taught at the new school for over 30 years. Shortly after retiring, she became ill and was hospitalized. In the hospital, she was treated like royalty, and when she recovered, she wanted to thank the person responsible for the care. She was told that it was the hospital director who ordered the VIP treatment. When she went to the director's office, she was surprised that the director was a woman in her early 40s. When she thanked the doctor interrupted her. I wanted to thank you, she said. Her words bewildered the teacher. You don't remember me, do you? Said the director. You bought me a pair of shoes many years ago. You cared for me, and you inspired me to want to care for others, so I became a doctor, and finally I was able to thank you for the shoes. You know, the older I get, when I was younger, that whole chicken soup for the soul stuff really got on my nerves. And the older I get, I find myself a little softened toward it, because sometimes we see it affecting us in ways that we don't truly realize. You know, we can give to God and others to our ability. I mean, that's what the widow did, and that's what all of us are being called to do. And we've been told that God is the one that brings the increase. So we need to give with faith. You know, we need to do his will with faith, that we may not feel like what we're doing is making a difference, but it is. And he's promised us that it is. We need to do it with that kind of faith. In Mark, the fourth chapter, we can teach his word knowing that it is fruitful and powerful, even when we can't, you know, when it's hard for us to see that. In verse 30 of Mark 4, then he said, to what shall we liken the kingdom of God, or with what parable shall we picture it? It is like a mustard seed, which, when it is sown on the ground, is smaller than all the seeds on earth, but when it is sown, it grows up and becomes greater than all herbs, and shoots out large branches, so that the birds of the air may nest under its shade. You know, when we see, Jesus is trying to show that just as God can take this small mustard seed that is insignificant and turn it into a large tree that's large enough to serve as a habitat, he can do the same thing with our poor efforts. You know, we may not feel like we have a lot to bring to the table, but God is able to make those things great because it's not about us, it's about him when we're doing his will. In Luke, the sixth chapter, starting in verse 27, but I say to you who hear, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you. Bless those who curse you, and pray for those who spitefully use you. To him who strikes you on the one cheek, offer the other also. And from him who takes away your cloak, do not withhold your tunic either. Give to everyone who asks of you, and from him who takes away your goods, do not ask them back. And just as you want men to do to you, you also do to them likewise. But if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. And if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. And if you lend to those from whom you hope to receive back, what credit is that to you? For even sinners lend to sinners to receive as much back. But love your enemies, do good and lend, hoping for nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for he is kind to the unthankful and evil. Therefore be merciful, just as your Father also is merciful. Judge not, and you shall not be judged. Condemn not, and you shall not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Give, and it will be given to you. Good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over, will be put into your bosom. For with the same measure that you use, it will be measured back to you. You know, when I read that last verse, I think about the last time I was up here, and we were talking about Malachi, where he's like, try me in this, that if you will give your tithes, that the, you know, heaven will rain down on you so you're not able to receive everything that's being given to you. And that's the idea here, is that when we're acting toward God, when we're kind to one another, when we're building each other up, then, you know, God is able to do great things. And, you know, I believe I saw that last night. And, you know, there's a story that I've got in my notes here, and this is, it's a hard story to even tell. And, you know, I was telling my wife about it this morning and getting choked up. There's a guy named Tim Sanders, and those of you who've heard this sermon before are going to remember this story, I'm pretty sure. You may not remember the story about the shoes, but this is one that sticks with you. He is a leadership coach. He is the former chief solutions officer at Yahoo. Now, when we think of Yahoo today, it's like, wait, wasn't that an internet site? But at one time, Yahoo was a big deal. You know, they were like buying other companies, and so I think all this happened back when they were at more of the height of their powers before they'd fallen off, which is a whole lesson in that. But anyway, it says he's the former chief solution officer at Yahoo, and he urges managers and supervisors to let their subordinates know how much they appreciate them. And he has a book called Love is a Killer App. And he often tells the story of a young manager named Steve. Now, I'm going to read this version, but there's another version on the internet. So if you're interested in at all in learning more about this, and I'll try to do it justice, but it's worth reading. And if you Google Tim Sanders' suicide story, you'll get this. So there was a guy named Steve who was a manager that reported up to Tim, apparently. And he was challenged by something that he had heard from Tim Sanders. You know, here, I mean, this is his boss's boss's boss, and he apparently did some kind of, like, interview or something that Steve got a hold of. And he heard that he had been challenged to spend more time with his people because they had a culture where they didn't see each other very often. And that happens. You know, the place I work, we've got people that are off-site that I've never met. I've been working with them, but I've never seen their face. I've heard them on the phone. And these people were in the same building, and he had 9 engineers reporting to him, and he hadn't seen 6 of them in 6 months. And, you know, that's just crazy to me to think about that you hadn't even laid eyes on somebody who worked in the same building as you in 6 months, because that's not how I operate at work. You know, I like to get out and mingle and talk to people and try to establish relationships. But anyway, so he resolved to visit each of his employees. And this is where it's, you know, it's kind of interesting to me. The different versions have kind of different details, but I think the core is still applicable. And so he visits all of his employees, and he wanted to tell each of them how much he appreciated them and name one thing they did excellently. So sometime after this visit, and it's hard to tell exactly how all this plays out, I don't think it was very long after, though, one of his software engineers, Lenny, presented him with an Xbox gaming console and the latest Madden game. And it wasn't even like a holiday or anything. And not only that, apparently there was the, you know, they hadn't gotten raises, and maybe even had, depending on which version you read, maybe it even had some pay cuts. You know, so he was really surprised that one of his subordinates that he was had not been able to pay more just out of the blue gave him this Xbox game console. And so he wanted to know what was up with it. And he finds out it had the way Lenny got the money was he sold a 9mm pistol. Lenny had been on the internet within a year or so before he took the job, for 2 years, I don't know, again, the details vary. He'd lost his mother. And his mother was one of the few people that really knew Lenny and much about him. And so he's very alone. And so he thought, if I take this job at Yahoo as a software engineer, there'll be a lot of people like me, and, you know, I'll be able to make some friends and you know, some contacts. He goes, but it's not easy, you know. And especially if you have a culture where your boss hasn't seen you in 6 months, it's pretty easy to understand how you could go to work every day and do your job and not ever get to know anybody, because apparently this was not a high contact type of job. And so he felt very alone. He didn't have anybody. And so he got on the internet and he found these suicide chat rooms that like basically were encouraging people to commit suicide. And he had gone out and bought a gun. And I'm not going to get into the gory details. If you want those are on the internet of how he kind of went through these steps. And he was getting close to pulling the trigger. And then Steve comes to him and sits down and puts his arm around him and tells him how much he appreciates the fact that Lenny always has his projects in on time or ahead of time. And that helps Steve sleep at night. And that he really appreciates his sense of humor over emails, that it really lightens the day. And that he's glad that, you know, that he's working for him. And he said, Lenny said he went home that night, and when he picked up the gun, all he could hear was Steve telling him that he was glad that he was in his life. And he went back and he sold that gun, and he used the money that he bought, because apparently Steve had made a joke over email that the financial controller at home, his wife, with the newborn, didn't want to let him buy this new Xbox, you know. And so Lenny brought it to him and said, you know, this gift is for my life. So, you know, and then Sanders writes, sometimes people just need people. They need encouragement. And says, you have no idea how lonely and sad some people might be. Love them everywhere, not just at home, but at work or wherever you find them. Well, if this worldly person can hear this worldly message and do this, how much more should we, with the love of Christ, be able to do these things? And, you know, that's the call that we have to love one another. In Romans, the 13th chapter, in verse 8, owe no one anything except to love one another, for he who loves another has fulfilled the law. For the commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not murder, you shall not steal, you shall not bear false witness, you shall not covet, and if there is any other commandment, are all summed up in this saying, namely, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. Love does no harm to a neighbor, therefore love is the fulfillment of the law. You know, I had a conversation with my father-in-law last weekend, and we were talking about whether or not the Sabbath commandment is still applicable today. And, you know, he was like, well, of course the Ten Commandments still apply. I'm like, well, they apply in as much as we have been retaught them in the New Covenant. And here we have a really beautiful retelling of the second half of the Ten Commandments. It's like, yeah, these all absolutely apply because they apply to the even more so. And that's the thing that's so challenging about the Ten Commandments. It's easy to put a sign out in your front yard. But the new covenant takes all of the commandments and raises the bar on them so high to a Christ level of, you know, attainment. And that's what this is about. It's loving one another. It's about willing to, and, you know, it's easy to hear pretty words and say, you know, that sounds great. And then to go away. And if you're like me, sometimes, you know, you may hear a really good sermon. And then later that week, you may remember it and say, you know, I was like the guy in James that saw the smudge on his face and then went away. It's hard to take these things and internalize them. But we, you know, we have to if we're going to be acceptable to God. And that's, you know, love does no harm to a neighbor. Therefore, love is the fulfillment of the law. In John, the 13th chapter. Here's Jesus getting ready to be crucified for all of us. And he says in verse 34 of John 13, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another, as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. You know, we talked about why Christ was so great in class this morning from Hebrews, you know. And a lot of it is that he was willing to come to earth and be like us and take on the things that we take on and show us how we can overcome those things and be better. And, you know, as he has loved us, again, I just mentioned, how high has Christ set the bar for us? That he's saying, I want you to love each other just like I loved you. All the great things that I've done, the magnificence of Christ is our example. It is our bar. It is what he expects of us. And again, that's where I'm grateful for 1 John, where we can have forgiveness of sins, because I don't attain that all the time or a lot of the time. And, you know, it's something we have to keep striving for, but that's the bar that has been set for us, that as he has loved us, that we love one another. And, you know, brethren, when I see the love that that has been shown to my family and I. I mean, and I see the hint of Christ in that. You know, I'm just so grateful to him, not only for dying for my sins, but for setting that example so that we can love one another like this, because it makes things better in a hard, hard world. You know, and you may be like, it's hard because you think, well, I see other people who are doing this so much better than I am. And I read something in the last week that was kind of, and I didn't even put it together until I was thinking about this lesson, but it's like, you know, every master was once a graceless beginner. You know, and that's something important to remember as we find ourselves struggling with things that we see our brothers and sisters in Christ and we think, boy, they're so much better at it than I am. Well, there was a time they weren't better at it than you are. There was a time they were no better at it than you were. But the difference is that they, you know, kept doing it, and possibly that God gave them a gift that, you know, or a talent that you may not have the most of. But the point is, all of us can get better at these things. And the things that he's commanded us to do are things that he's given us the ability to do. It's just that simple. And we just have to practice them to get better at them. And sometimes we have to be willing to start small. In Matthew, the 10th chapter, we'll start in verse 40. He who receives you receives me, and he who receives me receives him who sent me. He who receives a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward, and he who receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward. And whoever gives one of these little ones only a cup of cold water in the name of a disciple, assuredly I say to you, he shall by no means lose his reward. You know, Christ is trying to point out here, I think, that he's like, you know, you may be tied up in thinking that I've got to do the best thing ever, and I've got to be like Solomon, I'm going to build the temple, and, you know, everybody's going to be like, wow, Kevin did this great thing for God. And it's like, you know, if I do that, is that about God or is it about me? You know, he's saying, you know, if you just do this little thing, if you're doing it for the right reasons, God's not going to overlook that. He's going to know that you did it. And I really, this was not in my notes, but over in Matthew 25, it's one that I just keep coming back to. I'm not going to read it all, but it's verses 31 through 46. And I was really thinking about it when Brian in class this morning was talking about how Christ came and was hungry and thirsty and all these things, so that we can't say, you don't know what it's like. Not that, I mean, God knows everything anyway. But the point is, he has demonstrated to us in a way that we can clearly understand that he knows what it's like to be us and to suffer like we do. And that, to me, when I think about that, adds a whole new level to this idea that on the judgment day, he's going to require us to have helped people who are suffering like he suffered to show us that he knows what it's like to suffer. Because he's saying, you know, when you've done it to the least of these, you've done it to me. I've come to suffer for you, but I'm not doing it so you can make me better. I'm doing it so you can make each other better. That's what he's done for us. You know, he's saying, when you do it to the least of these, you've done it to me. And, you know, it's not that I need it, but you all need it. And you need to do it for each other. And I'm suffering so that you can show each other this compassion, this mercy, and this love. And, you know, when you think about it that way, it really drives it home that Christ is saying, I'm paying it forward. I'm taking this on myself, not so you can turn around and say, well, Christ, I love you so much. I'm going to do this for you. But say, no, you do it for all of these, and then you're doing it for me. It's only until you do it for each other that you're doing it for me, because otherwise, you're not really doing it for me. And that's really striking. You know, there's something else that I thought about, because we don't know how much we affect other people. And we all know people that have really affected us. You know, I was looking this past week. Mr. Rogers has been in the news a whole lot because they're getting ready to do this movie about him. And back in 1997, he had that speech where he got up in front of all these glitzy TV people. And there's been a whole lot written about that because he asked them just to take 10 seconds of silence and think about people that had encouraged them. And, you know, there's kind of like a laugh at the beginning. And then it's like, then there's tears because people actually stopped and thought just in 10 seconds, you know, and you can see it in they're panning over the crowd. I've actually watched this, and, you know, to think about how other people have affected us. We all know other people that have affected us, and they may not even know how much they've done for us. And so we don't always know what we're doing for other people. And sometimes it's just something small that really sticks with you that you've done for somebody else. And, you know, I hope I haven't shared this before, because if I, you know, once is probably too many times to share it, but I was just really struck by it. And I don't mean this to sound like bragging or arrogant at all, but I was in a meeting a few weeks ago. There's a guy at work named Evan, really young guy, you know, makes me feel really old because I know I'm more than twice this guy's age. And he was there when I started, but apparently he'd only been there like a month or two when I started. And real quiet, but seems to do a really good job, and had already moved up from QA to a developer role in 10 months, which is pretty good. And the guy that was replacing him is a guy named Kendall, a new guy. And I was going into a meeting with him, and I don't meet with these guys very often. I don't remember what the topic even was. And the three of us were the first ones in there. And I met Kendall. It was the first time I'd met him. And Evan said, "Yeah, this is Kevin. He's the nicest guy here." And I looked at him funny, because I thought he was making a joke. He goes, "No, I'm being serious. You are the nicest guy here." I'm like, "You know, what in the world? You know, how low has the bar been set if I'm the nicest guy here?" But what I thought of when I really thought about that, in Galatians, the second chapter, and this is the verse I want to leave you with, because it's the challenge, I think, for each one of us today. Because if we read verses 20 and 21 and we think about them for just a minute, I think we can put some things into perspective. Paul says, "I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me. I do not set aside the grace of God, for if righteousness comes through the law, then Christ died in vain." When we're doing what Christ wants, that's how Christ lives through us, brethren. And so, yes, grace is absolutely, there's nothing I've done that would make God say, "Well, you know, Kevin sure is special. I need to make sure that he gets saved," you know. But when I do the things that Christ has asked of me in response to the grace that he's shown me, and how else? Until I do what he says, Christ can't live in me. You know, that's the thing that's so frustrating when we see these sort of empty, "Well, God, I'm going to accept the gift that you've given me. Thanks." No, it's got to be turning your life over to him to do the things that he wants, or he can't live through you. Because it's only in following him and showing what he has done that Christ is living in us. And, you know, and if there's, and I, again, this is what's encouraging, because when we think, "Well, boy, I sure haven't attained yet." Well, I'm here to tell you, I sure haven't attained everything. And yet, even if the things that I do, somebody can see that, then it shows that, you know, it does make a difference to do the things that God wants us to do, because people will notice. And, you know, and so that's the challenge for all of us this morning. Is Christ living in me this morning? Is Christ living in you? Is he living in you? If not, "Oh yeah, I was baptized." No, okay, that's great. That's very important. You got to do that. But it's now. Is Christ living in you? Do people see Christ when they look at you? Not perfectly. I'm not saying that. But I mean, if somebody can't see Christ when they look at you, then you've got a problem that you need to fix. And that's true if you've never become a Christian. Well, then, yeah, people aren't going to see Christ in you because you haven't done the things that he wants you to do. And you need to do that this morning. But if you've done that, like most of us have, and you can look at yourself this morning, and, you know, when you look at yourself in the mirror of the Word of God, you don't see Christ there, then there's something you got to fix. And you got to figure out what that is, and you need to make it right. If there's something we can do to help you with that, we want to do that, because that's the only way we're going to get to heaven. And that's why we're here this morning, right? I mean, at the end of the day, we're here this morning to worship God because he has sent his Son to die for us so that we can spend forever in heaven with him. And we want to be there one day. So if there's anything we can do to move anything out of the way that's going to hinder that, we want to do that for you this morning. If you're subject to the call of the gospel this morning, please come as we stand together and sing.